welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 288 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and me good pal Sean Orford. You all right, Sean?
I'm okay. I'm in a state of panic because we've got cameras on and...
Yeah, we're doing a bit of testing here.
We've had no makeup.
A camera, we're recording this, but I don't think it'll be made public, this epic, but we bought this snazzy new live streaming camera, hey?
Yeah, yeah. It is very sexy.
Yeah, we'll chat about it in a bit shortly about our plans and what we're up to. But what we're talking about today, we're talking about disaster, aren't we?
Yeah.
About, well, actual physical disasters in terms of what's going on in Indonesia at the moment, or what's happened.
But that's, it was your idea. We were talking about how does that actually affect what is going on for us personally. You know, yeah. There's the issue of tsunamis that are going on out there, but we have emotional tsunamis in here.
Our own personal tsunamis.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time, man. Okay, so we'll talk about that shortly. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for the show notes and links. Some important ones today in terms of like what charity stuff that you can help out with. And yeah, do get in touch with us if there's anything you would like us to discuss. If you sign up for the newsletter through the site, you will get weekly alerts for the show and a discount code for the book, free meditation files and lots of other bits and bobs. What have you been up to, Sean?
Very good, very good. What have I been up to? I've been started running some courses in the Middle East online, which is very interesting. And one of the reasons why ideas of cameras and how we do that. So I've been here in the UK looking at a lecture hall in the Gulf. And us interacting in between. Had loads and loads of teething problems with sound and vision and all kinds of stuff. But yeah. As a first off, but it's I'm sure we're going to be able to hone it so it works well.
Cool, man. Start spreading the word, hey?
Yeah.
Internationally.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as we already do with this show, but yeah, yeah. For those folks that don't know what we look like, maybe they don't really want to, but you get it one way or another.
Yeah. That's yeah. Weird. It's strange.
Yeah, so, yes. For long time listeners here, so we're recording this on this camera called a Mevo, which is in front of us, and it kind of chops between the person that's speaking all by itself, hopefully.
Yeah, we're still experimenting, aren't we? So now you've just gone red and I'm talking, oh no, I've gone red now. Hi.
Yeah, but the idea is that we can live stream this show at some point and we can have audience participation with comments coming in on Facebook or YouTube. I'm not sure which we're going to use yet.
So do you think we could actually do this live at a particular time of the week?
I think so.
So
yeah, even if we've only got a few people listening in, asking questions, then we can still then put that out.
So the audio could go out as an audio anyway,
yeah.
And then the video would be live streamed, but then you could go and grab it off the site if you wanted to.
Exactly, so the show would be online as normal forever and ever, but if you happen to be there and then when it's getting recorded, you can get involved a bit and ask questions. Maybe there's little things, well, there are things that we, you know, after I've finished recording, I wish I'd mentioned that, I always think.
Yeah.
The show is going to evolve a bit in the coming weeks and months, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Along with new books and things coming out.
Yes.
It's getting close.
Yeah, exciting. All right, we'll crack on with this week's show.
Yep.
Can you get the show note? Oh, you got it there, sorry.
I've got it here. Hey.
So, in the last few days since recording this, there's been a pretty horrendous natural disaster in Sulawesi in Indonesia. So, earthquake followed by tsunami is, well...
And now followed by an eruption as well.
And a volcanic eruption,
yeah,
just for good measure.
Yeah, and it's like how difficult is that? I mean, I could say how unlucky is that, but just how difficult is that for one set of people to be hit by one thing after another?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the death toll at the moment is about 1,200, but many, many times more people just there's nothing left.
Yeah,
I've seen the photos,
yeah,
the videos of what's gone on there. Just whole massive areas of land just obliterated. So it's from the perspective of those people out there now, we're really lucky in the UK because that stuff just doesn't happen to us in our part of the world. We have disasters on a smaller scale, you know,
I don't know, train disasters or pileups on the motorway. But
we get a strong wind and a few trees fall down. We get excited.
We do. We get the odd storm that batters.
Yeah, a bit of flooding.
But how do we relate to the people out there now that are going through this? I mean,
The first thing I'd like to say
is it too soon for them to even contemplate getting over it emotionally?
Oh, for them, that's way away, isn't it? The thing for me with people that are listening to this is that there will be appeals for money, and these guys out there would literally have nothing, you know, and anything that anybody can contribute, whatever. Will really, really help these people because they have no food and they have no power, they have no resources, they have nothing.
Yeah.
And unless we as a collective, as the human race, actually step in and do something for them, they will really be in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
They already are.
Actually, I haven't had any. Usually I get texts from Oxfam or other organisations that I've signed up with in the past saying, can you send us money, and you just send a quick text there and then, and it's like 5-10 quid, whatever, dead easy.
One of the problems at the moment with a lot of those organisations is because lots of things are being brought into disrepute at the moment because of the sexuality charges of people taking advantage of people they're supposed to be looking after, and people start to withdraw their funding, and I get that and I understand that, but these people are really, really needing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, my resource, spoiler alert, is to the British Red Cross, who are fundraising at the moment, and they're out there helping out. But it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Just give what you can.
And it is a case of, I keep saying, if we all look after each other, we will all be all right. We're just not very good at it, but we have to learn.
Yeah.
You know, the whole of the human race, if we all look after each other, we're going to be okay.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So what do we do when all seems lost? When your house falls down in the middle of the night and your whole town or your whole city is disappears?
Well, we were looking at the idea about, we all have at some point, many people have that kind of personal tsunami that just takes everything away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Over the years, I worked with people like somebody driving home from work and having to pull over to let the fire engines come by, not realising, and then getting to their house and their house is completely destroyed and so is their family. Now, I've had to work with those kinds of situations where the person has gone from being completely normal and fine and singing with the radio to having absolutely nothing on any level, you know, people, property, all gone.
For those folks, then, how long does it take just to get process the initial shock? Are we talking days, weeks?
No, if you go to psychological definitions, you're saying like 4 weeks is people process trauma. After 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, it becomes post-traumatic stress disorder. When you're talking about things like this, you could be talking about years.
Right.
Years. I mean, when I first started practice, I worked with men who had been... They were called Chindits. They had been dropped behind the Japanese lines in the Second World War in Burma. And they lived in the jungle, groups of five. They'd nip out and sabotage things and kill people and nip back in again. And many of them got caught and ended up in Japanese concentration camps.
Right.
And I was working with guys in the 70s who were severely traumatised and still had post-traumatic stress disorder from what had gone on for them.
Yeah, well, I've just finished watching The Bodyguard, BBC series, which is, I was a bit slow on the uptake with it, but we rattled through it. And yeah, that kind of, well, apart from the many other things it deals with, it's the PTSD of the soldier, the main guy, you know, he's still living with and dealing with trauma from years ago.
Yeah.
It's
interesting. And there are lots of people that have been... In active service, and included in that I would include all the 999 workers, the ambulance drivers, the police, anybody, you know, certainly the A&E staff. So many people get traumatised in such difficult ways because they're doing our stuff for us and we don't appreciate that.
Mm.
You know, I may not agree with armies and wars, but if we send our people out to do things, then we do have a responsibility and a duty to them if they've been out there fighting in our name for us.
Yep.
and we don't look after people properly.
Mm.
We pretend that we do, but we don't.
Yeah, my kind of road safety quest stuff that I'm working on at the moment, I'm dealing with a lot of, I'm working with quite a lot of police officers actually that I haven't mentioned it directly, but I'm aware that the fact that a lot of their time is spent going to road situations where there's been smashes. There was one day last week where Merseyside Police, there was one car they have that goes around dealing with stuff, went to 17 crashes in one day in Merseyside, and I don't think any were fatal or even necessarily serious injuries, but just
that they could have been
constantly on the go, just going to these little mini tsunamis, cleaning up the mess. Like the personal, the effect on the people that go to clear up the mess is huge, isn't it?
Mm.
And every single one is avoidable. That's what frustrates me.
Yeah.
There's no particular reason why any of these should be happening.
One of the toughest things in terms of post-trauma is when someone's hit from behind when they weren't expecting it. You know, they stopped at the traffic lights and they stopped looking in the mirror. And then suddenly there's a lorry or something, a van comes up behind them and takes the back of their car out, and then they get the whiplash.
Yep.
And those kinds of traumas are really hard because the person didn't see it coming. If you observe something coming towards you and hitting you, you're processing before it happens. When it comes out of the blue like that, it can be devastating.
Yep.
And to get someone back in a car again, or they end up in total paranoia if there's anybody driving behind them, because they're now terrified that they're going to get hit.
Mm.
And being able to desensitise that is really, really difficult.
So, for those accidents where you do get hit from behind and there's no warning whatsoever, is there still a way that we can be tsunami ready? We can be ready for that in the knowledge that at some point for all of us, the shit's going to hit the fan, right?
Somewhere, yeah. You know, most people have to face
their own
crisis. I'm going to say my own thing, but I'm repetitively boring. It's like, if you practice mindfulness, so you develop a solid core, when the madness happens, you can refer back to that core, and that's what keeps you sane. So it's being able to sit on the bank, watching the madness of the river flow by without getting in the water.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you can do that, then you survive. And even if you do fall in the water, if you're prepared mindfully, you can swim to the bank, get back out, dry yourself up, sit down and recover.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mindfulness, as we know from our dear friend Ed, who can't do it, is that mindfulness isn't just meditation.
Okay, yeah.
Mindfulness is about the way that we live, the way that we think, and how much responsibility we take for ourselves too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, I'd like everybody to be meditating, including Ed, but on the basis that some people can't, don't, won't, whatever, then there are other ways of doing it. I'm sure when you're riding your bike, you are in the zone, you're in the present, you're in the moment, because you're still alive, which is quite a good thing.
Yeah,
considering
the route I came in this morning.
Was it a good one?
Yeah.
You came down the motorway.
I came the fun way down Borough Road, because I hadn't done it in a while, so I thought, I'll see what it's like, and it's as crazy as ever.
Yeah.
The folks in the cars merrily kind of, it's a completely different situation, isn't it? Whereas I'm like skin of my teeth, loving it actually.
Yeah, but my thing is if you've got a high-vis jacket on, can they see you?
That's a whole other, we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
A whole other podcast.
I think that the issue of if you hit from behind, if you're sideswiped, so you don't see it coming, that's when it can be most shocking. But if you are more aware, if the person that is stopped at the traffic lights does still have an awareness of what's going on behind them, they can process stuff before it hits them.
Yeah.
And that's true in everyday life. The more aware and awake we are, then the less shocked we are.
Yeah, so that awareness thing is important, isn't it?
Because
we all know people that aren't... Because we have this awareness, don't we, you and I, Sean? We're switched on.
We are.
We know what's going on.
Yes.
But we see people, not in this room, in this office perhaps, but across there, or in this building, that they're not quite there when you're talking to them. You know, you can realise that they're missing out on certain things.
But they're not in the present. They're somewhere else. And if someone is living in the past, ruminating on the past, or ruminating on the future, they're not where they are. How many times do you drive a car and you maybe you've been driving for 20 minutes or longer, and suddenly you realise you can't remember that period of time that you were driving?
Yeah, you've just been on autopilot.
Yeah, but you weren't there.
Yeah, and how much of our lives are spent like that?
Yeah. Well, I've said to you, haven't I, about the amount of people that come to retirement and they're shocked because it's like, where's my life gone? Someone's stolen my life. They were never present in the
lives. Yeah.
So they missed it.
Okay.
They missed the journey.
Well, maybe, straying away off topic a little bit here, but getting back on track, maybe sometimes we need a tsunami of any kind or some kind of disaster to wake us up.
Yeah.
Is that what it takes for some people?
Yeah.
Not that I would, you know, wish it on anyone, of course.
But
sometimes is this what it takes to wake people up?
Yeah. I was in doing a course yesterday in one of the hospitals over in Liverpool, and one of the nurses on there was actually, we were talking about gratitude, and she was saying how the patients that she works with on a regular basis makes her realise how lucky she is and how grateful she is for her life. And because she's working with, say, like a mum in her early 30s who is terminal with cancer, got kids and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And on a regular basis, she has that awareness. So the disasters around us can wake us up. Equally so, I've had people say to me, cancer is the best thing that ever happened to me, and that's because they survived it, but it changed their lives.
Yeah.
It made them get it into perspective.
So, yeah, like a serious health issue can be a real wake-up call. Like we were doing in the H room of the building here a couple of weeks ago, as part of something I was helping organise with World Council, blood pressure checks.
All right.
Because apparently, like, 1 in 3 people or 1 in 4 are walking around with high blood pressure, unaware.
Yeah.
And if you don't get that kind of sorted at some point, it's going to come and bite you quite seriously.
Yeah.
But a lot of people walk around without that awareness. For me, yeah, not that it wasn't especially serious, but finding out that I had high cholesterol-ish was a bit of a wake-up call, you know, and it happened almost by accident when I got the blood test done. But that was a wake-up call to kind of cut certain things out of my diet and get healthy and start riding a bit more, get a bit more exercise in my life.
Yeah. But if the options in life, in terms of our own development, is either pain or awareness, do we have to have a disaster to get us there, or can we do it ourselves with mindful awareness?
Yeah.
You know, then you don't need the tsunamis. Or if the tsunamis come, then they're less destructive.
Part of the kind of clean-up effort and the kind of the news that's been going around about it is that the warning systems that Indonesia put in place, I think in 2006 or 7, weren't, well, in operation or didn't do the job that they should be. That could have brought people out half an hour to let them know that this 20-foot wave was coming.
Yeah.
So I was reading a little about that online.
But one of the things that you mentioned when you were telling me about that was that one of the reasons they weren't working was because they'd been vandalised.
Well, the systems, from what I've read, were multiple systems, like kind of measuring the height of the sea. There were these buoys, there's 22 buoys far out to sea measuring the size of the waves. And those weren't in operation at all because they'd been in disrepair and some had been vandalised.
But that's crazy. Why would us as human beings damage the things that would save our lives?
Yeah.
And why would you vandalise? That's crazy.
I don't know, but I mean, I assume they were set up in 06 for a few years. People were like, okay, well, maybe we get to that point where we get complacent, don't we? We don't need them, it's going to be fine. We've not had a massive one for 5 or 6 years, and then Mother Nature comes and reminds us to wake up.
Yeah.
And, you know,
crazy, eh?
So are we just, the humans, naturally, is that just inbuilt kind of laziness and kind of we become complacent?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to get my laptop charger. You can talk.
Yeah. Because I think that the issue has to be that unless there is some pull, unless there is some reason to do things, why do anything? Lots of people don't bother to get out of bed because there's no reason to get out of bed. So unless we create or we have awareness, then there is no reason to do anything.
Yeah, so awareness is about having that inbuilt warning system within us.
Yeah. And that there are people who are very feather-bedded. I think I told you a while ago about the person that I saw who came to see me because they were in distress because they were down to their last million and they were afraid they were going to be broke. they started off with something like 15 as a settlement on something. And they chewed their way through it and they were down to the last million. And suddenly they were scared that they were suddenly going to have no money. And for me, if I'm broke, it means I haven't got any money. I'm down to my last five and not my last million.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
deep into the overdraft. Yeah.
But it's like, at what point does someone wake up? So at the million point, this person was prepared to wake up to do something about their life so they didn't run out of money.
Did they turn it around?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But for them, the million was a crisis point. Yeah. It's how you see it.
Because they have this lifestyle which they need to choose through a lot of cash.
And what happens, and I see this quite a lot now, when you get young people that are still living at home with their parents, and they're getting into their 20s, maybe then towards their 30s, and they're not really doing anything with their lives. And the basis is they don't have to. Everything's provided. You know, there's the food, the lodging, there's the warmth. And they have no reason to actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that they say that 30 is going to be the new 20, that people won't leave home until they're kind of 31 rather than 21.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of scary stuff, really.
But is it? Does it have to be? Maybe that's the new natural, the way we should have been doing it all along.
Do you think if we live longer, then it's okay to stay at home longer?
Possibly. Yeah, it's a deep and complex issue in it, with kind of house prices built in and wage depression and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Mind you, I have seen someone recently who's young, who wanted a house, managed to scrape together 10 grand, which is a minimal amount of a deposit these days, you know, begged and borrowed, and has managed to get a house where you buy a percentage of the house.
Oh, yeah.
So she's bought into a housing scheme,
yeah.
So she's on 10,000, so she's like, I'm in, I've started, you know, I'm going to do it.
Cool.
Which is good, yeah. Mm. Brilliant. Yeah.
Very good. There's a couple of links I'm going to put in show notes to kind of like points on how you can get help with disaster. Actually, it's not really related to natural disasters. It's more personal disasters and tsunamis that will hit us at some point. So surviving, getting through that initial kind of shock period, and then getting your feet steady on the ground again and breathing. And there's some really good practical tips, actually, which I will link through. But anything in particular stood out to you in any of these?
I think that the issue is awareness, so that we are prepared. It's a bit like death for me. It's like we're all going to die. But when I work with people that are in the process of dying, they're surprised. And it's like, I never really thought this had happened, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the more we're aware of things, not in a morbid way, in a positive way, then the less of a shock it is when it happens. I mean, one of the things about getting older is you're going to die, and you're going to die of something. No one's going to write on my death certificate, not my birth certificate, that Sean died of, it came naturally to the end of his life. I mean, you die.
I'll write that on if you want. I'll scribble that on for you.
but you die because your heart stops or your brain blows, or there's some reason why you die.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to happen. And you're saying about cholesterol and blood pressure, if people have an awareness of that, then they stave off that particular tsunami, maybe forever.
Exactly, yeah. That's an early warning system that we can do. Anyone out there, you know, in the next 24 hours, make a GP appointment or find someone with a blood pressure machine that can...
Yeah. I usually carry a portable one with me, because I do use it quite a lot with people.
But we're hoping to have one installed in the building somewhere that people can go and calm down for a few minutes on the lunch break and get blood pressure check whenever they want.
It's interesting when you do that with somebody, because if you sit down and you take your blood pressure, it wouldn't actually be high, yeah, because your blood pressure fluctuates all throughout the day. If you can just sit for 10 minutes and take your BP again at 5 minutes and then at 10 minutes, you can watch it coming down and you're getting a more realistic idea of where your blood pressure is.
Okay.
Because lots of people get what they call white coat syndrome. As soon as you bring the meter out, their blood pressure goes straight up in the air, because they're thinking, panic.
Like a lie detector test. Yeah. I'm telling the truth, I swear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, a pal of mine was in the day that we were doing that, and we were chatting, and then I was like, you need to get your blood pressure checked, mate, it's here. And he could tell he didn't want to, because he's got a high stress job, sales, he's around the country in the car all the time, he's got two kids on the go, and he didn't want to kind of say, go on, get it done. And he did, and it was high. But now he has that like actual awareness and a sheet of paper with it on.
The thing that's useful if you do your BP is to check it at different times of day and then different days of the week. If someone's blood pressure spikes up because they're doing something energetic, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And the cardiovascular health is when either your heart rate or your blood pressure goes up, is how quickly does it come back down again?
Yeah.
That's what you're observing, which is why that 10 minute thing, you can watch your blood pressure coming down.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, that's again about knowing your body, isn't it?
Yeah.
And knowing the situation around you and being disaster ready.
Yeah.
Mm. And kind of, well, there are, I mean, when an earthquake hits, there's only so much you can do if you've got a city of 5 million people and, you know, it's going to be a certain amount of issue, but there are ways in our personal lives that we can limit disaster when it hits, isn't it? Either through better healthcare or just kind of knowledge there.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's awareness, but as I keep saying, it's mindfulness, The more mindful we are, the more connected we are, then the more aware we are and the more we're protected against the tsunamis when they come and say hello.
I've just seen that that's still recording. I take it is. Interesting
it is,
to see what's going to come out the other end when we record this one.
Yeah.
Have you got a resource of the week?
Well, I've put down the... how do you survive an emotional tsunami? Which is a nice little article.
Brilliant.
Which is good.
And mine is a link to the Red Cross donate page. Which just send some cash, simple, or find another organisation that's doing some good work.
Yeah.
And just do it.
And on the basis that people in the UK that are on benefits are still in the 10% richest people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't realise how little people have, that these people have nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would also, I mean, don't just chuck the money and run. I would try and follow the story because, you know, it's going to drop out of the news cycle in the next few days probably. And life will go back to normal for us, but it's going to be a year, two, 3 year long cleanup operation for the people there. So follow it and carry on helping if you can. And I don't know, there's other ways to help, aren't there?
Yeah, all kinds of things.
Keep that awareness up.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Cool. Right, we're going to see how that video looks. And, maybe next week or the week after, we'll do an actual live stream podcast.
A real one.
I think we're going to do it through the Facebook page. facebook.com/LITP now, or just search for Live in the Present, you'll find us. Just a little test before we start setting up lights and getting things looking a bit more professional, hey?
Yeah. Who's going to do the makeup?
Good question. Next door, actually, I think. In the office next door, right. Flawless Cosmetics.
Okay, we'll be
Botox and all sorts.
I'm not having Botox.
cool, you have a good week, Sean.
And you, take care.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.